Habakkuk is the most dangerous biblical book that you've never heard of. For me, my first encounter with the book of Habakkuk was in Hebrew class, in seminary. We had to pick one of the 12 prophets, minor prophets, to do a report on. And we did this paper on it. It was individual, it wasn't group work. And I wasn't familiar with too many of the minor prophets at all. And Habakkuk is only 3 chapters long, seems short. And I picked Habakkuk pretty much at random as the paper that I was going to do. The professor, when he asked me which prophet I was doing my report on, this professor was a very mild, gentle, and generous man, very smart, gave me this deadpan look when I said Habakkuk and said, "Ah, yes, Habakkuk. That's the prophet I wrote my first book on." I got a good grade on the paper, fortunately. But it was dangerous. And it was so dangerous because Habakkuk talks about the oppressors and people in power. And in Nazi Germany, military censors banned the book of Habakkuk in some areas because it talked about the people in power in a not very nice way. In South Africa, apartheidists found the book of Habakkuk to be anti-government and anti-establishment, and they thought it was a subversive text that people would read when they wanted to be liberated from oppression. And there's no question to me that Habakkuk knew what it meant to be on the outside of government and of power looking in. He knew what it meant to be not part of the establishment. And he starts right off by asking a question of God. Habakkuk's not a very long book, 3 chapters, and it's just a dialogue, really, between God and the prophet. It's a back and forth. You can read it quite quickly. But Habakkuk asks God a question right off the start, right at the beginning. He asks a question that any sensitive person of faith has asked over time, if we're honest. And that question is why? Why, Lord? Why did this happen? There are words of lament in the hospital. Why, Lord? Why has this happened? These are the first words out of your mouth after receiving a bad news phone call at 3 a.m. Why, Lord? Why, Lord, is the cry for sorrow uttered as children die in Yemen day after day, week after week, and world leaders seem powerless or uninterested to do anything to stop it? Why, Lord? Why, Lord, is the shocking choke in the throat when an act of religious violence and hatred comes to our own neighborhoods in the Tree of Life shooting? When people who were doing the same thing we're doing this morning, just coming together to worship, and they're cut down? Why, Lord? Habakkuk asks, why, Lord? Because he knows that Judah is in trouble. Judah is in trouble internally, due to its own political and governmental institutions. They've got an ineffective government. They have hypocritical politicians. Justice is perverted by the powerful who define the laws as whatever suits me today. And then when Judah looks out over beyond just their local problems, when they look out at the world situation, they notice that it's no better, that there is menace externally. Egypt is the menacing superpower to the south, and Israel has had a tussle with Egypt before, right, in the Exodus. And then there is this new power, this new country called Babylon, who is menacing and rising up and getting stronger and stronger, becoming indeed a superpower to the east. And Habakkuk says, how long, Lord? Why, Lord, is this happening? Why does everything look so bleak? He asks his question, not in an online forum, nor does he post his question on Facebook or in a letter to the editor, but Habakkuk goes to God in prayer. And he asks why in worship, in liturgy. God's answer to the how long is not recorded in the passage for this morning, but God does quite remarkably answer Habakkuk. I encourage you to go and read it later if you are so interested, because we often talk about how come God seems kind of silent. This is one of the places where somebody asks God a question and they actually get an answer, remarkably, in verses 5 through 11 of chapter 1. God tells Habakkuk, answers Habakkuk, that the wrong will be fixed, that the wrong will reap what they have sown, that those who have been wicked will have wickedness done to them, that those who have shamed the weak and the poor will feel shame. God says that that invading force that I just mentioned, the Babylonians from the east, will come into Jerusalem, and Babylon will be an instrument of God's wrath, which will end the nation of Judah and will end the oppression of the people. Habakkuk's response then is picked up again in chapter 2, verse 1. Habakkuk says, I will stand at my watch, and I will station myself on the city walls. Habakkuk compares himself to a watchman, to a soldier, a sentry, standing watch. The watchman stands at his post first to see if a messenger is coming. A watchman who is able to look from a really good watch post is able to see who is coming back from a battle, is able to see whether it's good news or bad news. They're able to tell in the swiftness of the messenger's feet how important the message may be. But the watchman is also supposed to watch over the horizon, because if you see sand and dust being kicked up, you know that an advancing army is on the way and you can sound the alarm. God tells Habakkuk, be patient at your watch post. Be patient at the highest point in the city where you can watch for what I am going to do. One day, probably 15 or 17 years ago now, I was at work in Lebanon, Pennsylvania at the church, and I could smell a horrible smell of smoke. And I walked around and I couldn't find out anywhere it was coming from, but it was just an unbelievably strong smell of smoke. And I walked outside, and at my feet, this little bit of ash just fell. And I turned around and looked behind me, and I could see that there was a huge plume of smoke, a gigantic plume of smoke. And I thought, well, something bad has just happened, and I either need to start running the other way, or I need to find out what this is. So I climbed up in the bell tower, which was about probably 100 feet, 75 to 100 feet, I'm guessing, where you could get up above the rooftops of the rest of the buildings in the city. And I could see that one of the weaving mills in Lebanon had caught on fire, and that that was what was going on. Couldn't hear, interestingly enough, any of the sirens yet. Didn't hear any of it. It was remarkably calm and quiet that day. But I could see everything that was going on. And we had, of course, instructed the secretary to call 911. And I could watch from my vantage point everything that was going on above the rooftops. It's the same thing that God says here. If you watch, Habakkuk, you will see something. If you don't watch, you're never going to know. You're never going to know what the cause of that smoke plume was. Jesus says a very similar thing in Luke chapter 11, verse 9. Ask and it will be given you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. If you want to connect to Jesus, you have to ask. One of Habakkuk's fellow prophets, the prophet Isaiah, says in chapter 55, verse 6, seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. You cannot seek the Lord if you are distracted in the basement, only if you are on the watch post. To wait patiently for Christ, to wait patiently for God in Advent, is to wait on tiptoe like a toddler who waits for his mother to come home, looking out the window, peeking out through the curtains, hoping that something marvelous is going to happen soon. To wait on tiptoe for God means to keep talking to God in prayer and in honesty. Habakkuk's question to God sounds almost to us as if it is a little bit irreverent. How long, O God? Why, O Lord? Why are you allowing this? But notice that God never chastises or criticizes Habakkuk. God never criticizes him for his question. Imagine, if you will, for a minute, how well Habakkuk has to know God to ask, how long, O Lord, are you going to let this go on? How long are you going to do this? You'd either have to be tremendously ignorant to ask God this question, because it seems kind of disrespectful, and in some places in the Bible, God doesn't seem to deal really well with disrespectful questions, or you have to know God really well and intimately. You have to know God really personally to speak to God so honestly and without filter and without trembling. Habakkuk knows that to name his frustration with God is no surprise to God. If he feels it, then God knows it. God knows everything and all about us, so what is the harm in him admitting it? What is the harm in Habakkuk telling God something that God already knows about him? So God gives Habakkuk one thing to do, one task. And he says to Habakkuk, you wait. So, that's why we're reading Habakkuk on this first Sunday in Advent 2018. Because what does that mean, to wait? What does that mean, to wait for God? Well, I think it means three things. I think it means three things that Ignatius of Loyola talked about generations ago. That if you want to wait for God, you have to, one, know God. That you should talk to Jesus so much this Advent that you can be as honest and as real, as much of an honest person as Habakkuk is. That if you talk to God, if you talk to Jesus over and over and over again, you will find that those worries about standing on ceremony will sort of melt away. And not only that you talk to Jesus this Advent, but one thing that we don't do very well in Advent, at least I don't do very well around my house, what happened the day after Thanksgiving, I turned on all the Christmas carols and I played them through the house. My family is already tired of hearing all the Christmas carols, every one of them. I think we played every single one already created, and it's only been, what, a week? Turn off the noise and listen for what God says to you. You can't listen very well if it's all noise. And December is not a good time of year to turn everything off. But Jesus requires it. So that's the first thing, to know God. That's what waiting means. But if you talk to Jesus, if you listen for Jesus, knowing God is one thing. The second thing is loving God. And if you know the man from Bethlehem, if you really deeply knew him, if you really deeply talked with him, you will learn what it means to love him and to turn your heart over to him. And then if you know God and you love God, then the third thing is you follow God. It was a long journey to Bethlehem. And it was hard for Joseph and Mary to follow God. They didn't know what was going on. As a matter of fact, they thought some of this was just crazy. Some of this waiting was just strange. Joseph and Mary had faced many challenges to get from Nazareth to Bethlehem. They faced many robbers, perhaps, on the road at night. The Magi faced being turned back at the border, for they were foreign. To register for the census for Joseph and Mary meant letting Herod know where you could be found and where you could be arrested, therefore. So in order to follow Jesus, in order to follow God, we must be prepared to keep following no matter what the cost or no matter what the danger or no matter what stumbling blocks come in the way. To live in Advent 2018 is to, like Habakkuk, stand on tiptoe and wait. Like Mary, We have to wait. Because Mary had a secret that she could not share with anybody because nobody else would believe it. So she had to wait. Joseph shared in this secret too. It was told to him in a dream that he was to marry Mary and that her secret was indeed true. But he couldn't share it with an awful lot of people. So he had to wait. We are to stand on tiptoe, like Mary, like Habakkuk, like Joseph. And if we do so, we will be in good company, waiting for God, who gives us a message of safety and salvation and justice, and gives us hope on this first Sunday in Advent. Amen.